welcome to A Day at DPL, the thought leadership series of the Advisor Revelations podcast. In this episode, DPL founder and CEO David Lau is joined by Brian Saunders, Managing Director and Head of Private Equity at Atlas Merchant Capital. Tune in as they discuss how the integration of insurance is redefining firm valuations across the wealth management landscape.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to A Day at DPL. I've got a great guest today, Brian Saunders from Atlas Merchant Capital. Brian is Managing Director and the Head of Private Equity for Atlas, and DPL has been fortunate enough to have Atlas as one of our equity backers for many years now and a terrific partner for us. And so great to bring Brian on. So welcome, Brian.
Thanks, David, for having me. This is great.
Yeah, it gives me a chance to ask you questions rather than the other way around. So this is great. Anyhow, let me tell everybody just a little bit about Atlas Merchant Capital and what you guys do and how you look to invest.
Sure. So Atlas, we are a financial services focused private equity fund. Started a dozen years ago by two gentlemen, Bob Diamond, who was former CEO of Barclays, and David Seamus. David's background was actually at Flowers & Co., which is one of the first financial services focused private equity shops. And David and Bob, formed Atlas to focus on investing kind of across the spectrum in financial services. So we like to talk about it as everything from balance sheet, capital, regulatory intensive businesses, like a bank or an insurance company or a runoff insurance book, all the way through to what we'd call kind of the more capital light, higher growth, often technology driven businesses like DPL, for example, at the other end of that spectrum. And we kind of do everything in between. And we focus on things basically in North America and Western Europe is our primary focus. And, we are, I think, are unique in that, like many private equity firms do only control transactions, whereas we actually have found great opportunities, especially in the financial services world, to do minority investments like we've made in DPL and kind of partner with the management teams to, where we see exciting growth opportunities to participate and help hopefully add some value along the way in those teams.
That's great. And like I was saying, I think Atlas, you been supporting DPL for 5-6 years now, which has been terrific. So, hearkening back to the, original investment. So what was appealing to you as an investor? What did you see that, we were endeavoring to accomplish that kind of fit your thesis and got you excited?
There's quite a few things, I think, in terms of, it's kind of a confluence of timing, right? So at that time, we just saw this transitioning beginning of maybe even well on its way of migration from your wire hosts and things like that into kind of the RIA space and independent advisors in general. And so we thought that was a very exciting opportunity. We saw people leveraging technology more and more in financial services and a lot of disintermediation being caused by that. And we saw this kind of need for people to have better independent advice solutions for not only kind of the wealth build up to retirement, but also then post-retirement, which a lot of people kind of miss. And so that was kind of the macro trends. And I think with DPL itself, what we were excited about was what we thought was the timing of you just entered into some really critical partnerships, both on the technology side with the Black Diamonds of the world, the Orions of the world, but also on the carrier side where you'd already had a handful of carriers that were added to the platform. And we thought, that was great timing in addition to, as we looked at kind of the technology platform and what it could do, and what it could allow advisors to see in such a simple way. We were super excited about that. And I think, David, you and I have talked about this before. Like, it's amazing to me that you can look at someone's portfolio and say you could do 2x better.
Right.
By improving something that you've got in the wrong spot today. It was those types of things where we just thought the efficacy of the end for the end client was so great. It was a natural thing to invest in.
Yeah, that's great perspective. And our chief growth officer, Tom Smith, points it out all the time. And lots of financial services areas these days, you're fighting for basis points. You're fighting for basis point improvement. And in removing the commission from annuity products and disaggregating advisor comp, you're getting, as you're pointing out, 100 basis points, 150 basis points of improvement to a product simply by putting it into a new structure to do the same thing. And, a lot of times I hear from people as we talk about it, present the company, they're like, how come somebody didn't do this before? It's like, it's lagged the rest of financial services, which makes it a good question because much of financial services, most of it really has already gone to this kind of structure. Mutual funds, nobody uses A shares anymore. It's all about I shares. It's all that trend has long been happening for the last couple of decades.
We've seen this across a lot of the traditional businesses that we've invested in, right? Oftentimes, the industry makes it hard for people to understand what the underlying thing is. It makes it hard to transition from one thing to another. And there's lots of people who have an embedded business base that like to throw rocks at the new kid in town. I was in telecom.
I've got some bruises from those.
Yeah, I was in telecom where people would say, you know, there's no way someone's going to use a wireless phone. Like, that's crazy. Or, you know, the long distance, you know, challenger. So I think that this industry, it also plays into, like, the RIA space isn't necessarily insurance experts.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, until someone develops something that allows them to confidently look at something and have a product that they can genuinely say, look, this is actually the best thing for you. There's a lot of hurdles to that. And I think DPL is going to overcome a lot of those challenges.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the macro trends you were talking about favorable to the business that intrigued you is, you know, the movement to independence, you know, and seeing advisors leaving wirehouses, leaving broker dealers, leaving the insurance channel, going independent. And part of my thesis also in starting the company is, while that's been a very strong trend, one of the things that holds them back is insurance. And if you can solve insurance for an independent advisor through a channel that in a way that works with them on a compensation basis and works on a technology basis, then you've now enabled more people to break away, because the insurance business that might have been important to them in their current channel, they didn't think they had an option, which is why the hybrid model kind of exists, basically. But we see more and more of that happening.
Yeah, and I think, and for those folks who don't have an insurance book today, it just gives you the ability to then offer your client kind of a more holistic solution, right? And I think about just in kind of my own advisor in terms of how he sees of my portfolio and my insurance, he actually has pieces. He doesn't have like a really holistic view, which you guys allow that person to have a holistic view of everything. And then as you're constructing the right portfolio for somebody, you need a longevity solution, that's this. You need a liquidity solution, that's this. You need an income generation, that's this. Like, you can see the whole thing. Whereas, honestly, to my advisor, I'm just a number. This is how much you have, and I don't really know what else is outside. But having that embedded on your desktop for the RIA and having the ability to kind of see that and manage that is just, you know, I think, better outcomes, again, for the client.
That's another evolution, right? When I started in the RIA business, you know, 20 years ago at this point, RIAs were really asset managers.
Yeah.
And they had that distinctive value proposition of, I'm a fiduciary and I manage your money based on a fee. So you pay me a fee, I don't get paid by product companies. And now everybody does that, right? So
yeah.
And in terms of managing your money, so as an RIA, you're no longer really differentiated on that basis from a broker-dealer rep, from a wirehouse rep. And at the same time, clients have demanded more from their financial advisor. So simply being an asset manager is table stakes. It's getting to be commoditized in many different ways. So being able to provide that holistic advice you're referring to include insurance or estate planning, tax planning, all of those things are now being asked of their financial advisor. And if you want to work on fees and be in insurance, that has always been a problem.
Yeah.
So that's part of what we solve. And that integration is critical. You know, when it's just a held away asset sitting out of sight, out of mind, just doesn't work in the same way. So the technology is critical.
And as you know, we talked about when we made the investment and as we have followed this along, we're always dumbfounded by the fact that there is no technology that can do this. There is nobody else that can do it. And I think it's both the combination of kind of the data lake that you start with, all the information you kind of have and gathered, the connectivity to people and be able to plug into their products, but also the ability to do other things other than annuities. So you can compare different things, which, you know, is really critical from, you know, for a fiduciary to do that. It just, it's not easy, obviously. And that's why it's such a valuable thing that no one had took the time to actually do all that, to pull that all together and put it in one place. Is kind of the critical differentiator, I think, and what can really add value to, you know, again, the RIAs have enough to worry about. They don't need to be trying to dig out all these other things, right?
Exactly. And we work with, you know, those RIAs, like you were describing, vote, and we talked about, have always been asset managers. This is now an expansion of their product set, their ability to manage more holistically. But the other huge trend, as everybody knows, is this trend of aggregation.
Yeah.
You've got firms going independent, advisors going independent, being acquired by these aggregators. And those aggregators are just getting bigger and bigger and bigger to the point, like the data I had a year ago is now dated. It's something to the effect of 6% of the firms control 84% of the assets. And those firms are a blend. They're not just asset managers. I mean, at that scale, they're becoming, you know, more and more like wirehouses themselves. And so they provide all of these services. And again, doing what we do is really a facilitator to them so they can integrate all kinds of different advisors. If you liked insurance before, maybe those firms didn't want to touch you because you didn't fit. But now we can help provide that solution. So not only expanding the capabilities of the traditional RIA, but enabling the hybrid to really go fee-based and fee-only.
I think it's always a challenge where individual advisor has to go figure out all this stuff by themselves and become confident that the confidence to recommend someone to put their money into it, obviously, is a big hurdle. And being able to kind of partner with these larger breakaways and firms, then can kind of consolidate that knowledge, educate the group, and then really be able to leverage it through the platform, which is kind of get it straight through. The ease of use then, right, becomes like, okay, now it's a tool I have rather than a thing that I kind of don't know what it is. I'm a little bit worried about talking about.
Right.
And I think that's the other piece of this is just there's been an education now that allows people to talk intelligently, confidently about what they're offering.
Yeah. And that's a great evolution of the business where you've pointed this out in many of our meetings where for the early years, we're beating the table saying, hey, we've got a really great solution here. You know, like what we've done with insurance is really great. You should take a look. And now it starts morphing into, okay, we heard you. We heard you. Can you make it easier? Can you do this better? Can you integrate it in this way? So when you're starting to get basically the demands of the business to make it easier, better, make the tech work in a different way, that's a great place to be because the market is coming.
Yeah.
And it's now more a matter of facilitation and throughput and making it easier and easier to adopt and leverage and expand.
And I think for the guys who are actually moving books too, it's also an ability to just like, you already have an insurance solution, but is it the best solution?
Right.
And the ability to kind of check that instantaneously effectively is actually, you're giving up 25, 30% of upside, which obviously is impactful for both the RIA themselves from an assets under management, but also the client. It's a huge difference. And to be able to do that by simply loading up what the existing product is and getting spit out what the outcomes are.
Right.
Again, that's just a huge value on an existing book that you're seeing. Like, I can do better for my clients using this.
Yeah, that's been a big focus of the tech, the ability to compare an old product to a new one. And we can do it on an individual basis, really simply. You can look it up in our system. You can take a photo of the statement, or you can just give us a data dump of your whole book and we can analyze the whole book. And so that's been hugely popular, you know, for the regular RIA to bring in held away assets. You know, they may not have sold the annuity, but their clients got an annuity. It's a great way to bring in held away assets. And then for those transitioning, there's no other way to do it.
Yeah. Right?
If you were to try to, instead of leveraging the cool technology we've built, to try to analyze your clients' annuities one by one to try to figure if they can find a better solution, it would take you, you know, forever to do that. And it would be painful.
And you'd need to be an expert in every rider. You need to be an expert in all these things, which, you know, the tools allow you to be an expert in instantly. And again, when the person purchased that, that might've been the best product at the time, but obviously time changes. So now is just might not be the best product anymore.
Yeah.
And it's not untoward to the product itself. It's just things have changed. And now this might be a better thing, more efficient.
Yeah. And that's what advisors get paid for,
yeah.
Right? Is always looking for the new and better thing. You know, lots have obviously moved from mutual funds to ETFs and from active management to, you know, passive low cost indices to get the same kinds of exposure. It's just one of those evolutions that that's what the advisor is getting paid for. And it also allows them to completely align their business model to be advice-based. Rather than if you're a hybrid, it's like, okay, sometimes I'm talking to you, Brian, as your financial advisor, and then let me put my insurance hat on. Now I'm selling you a product.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting paid by the product company. And that's a problem in many different ways. But if you wanted to use insurance before, that was the only option you had.
And again, I think when you're able to do that from your desk, you can show someone an illustration of this is what it looks like. And you yourself can kind of comprehend that quite straightforward. I think it's just a very powerful tool. And you can see a person is going to have an accumulation of X, but it's going to be 1.5, 2X. I mean, it doesn't really take a lot of selling. We oftentimes insurance is viewed as a sale, but it's not really selling anymore. It's kind of like, this is just a better outcome for you mathematically, which is a very different discussion.
Exactly. And then, so that's a bit of the easier conversation when you're having it with the traditional user of an annuity to say, this is just a new and better version, lower cost, aligns with your advice model. And then when you're talking to the RIA, the traditional RIA, who's probably hated annuities in the past, and my thesis is largely because they couldn't get paid. And Fisher kind of popularized attacking them, you know, as a good way of growing your business. But actually, they provide structural benefits to investing that you can't achieve through investing alone. Basically, unlimited tax deferral. You can get insured downside protection and you can get lifetime income. And you simply can't get those through invest alone. And now with the commission removed, we're basically delivering you a structured product that enables you to deliver those things. Great tools within a portfolio.
Of the highest credit rating possible.
Yes, exactly.
Right, like the risk of the... And I think, you know, it's funny you mentioned the product before. When we did our diligence on DPL, we went out to some folks on the insurance side and just said, you know, what do you think about this? When you said annuity, people are like, whoa, those aren't the most effective thing. And then as soon as you say, no, no, it's not a commission product, it's a fee-based product, they're like, oh, no, yeah, of course, that's great. I do feel like, though, in the last 3-4 years that we've been invested, I feel like that has changed a lot. I think people are, you know, starting to understand. And I think that's a little bit like you see in a lot of these things where the originators themselves, the carriers themselves are like, actually, this is a product that are, you know, we need to be selling. And that changes that. And then the distributors go, well, actually, this is a better product we need to sell. So hopefully we're over that.
Yes, we're certainly getting there, made a lot of progress. But then people are always interested. Private equity, you're sitting in a unique seat where you get to see a lot of new things. You get to invest in some, you know, other legacy businesses in different ways, but you see a lot of new things, a lot of new ideas, like when I came to you guys. But what else do you see? I know you guys are into crypto and you have a number of investments there. That's a hot topic among advisors. What are you guys investing in? What are you seeing there? What's of interest?
So I think from our perspective on, we really like the infrastructure side of things, to be honest, even including on the crypto side. And, you know, we've seen incredible push of private equity into, I'm going to say, you know, your insurance broker businesses, your wealth management platforms, your RIA platforms, et cetera, here in Europe, the same thing. What we liked about the technology, like, for example, like DPL, it's taking advantage of that across all those companies, across all those products. And so we really like that infrastructure play. So on the crypto side, we invested in a company called Circle. Circle is the most regulated US-based USDC, so US dollar digital coin. And we liked it because, you know, from our standpoint, we think there will be a digital transformation. And we think that US dollar-based capability will be used by all the major financial institutions, one form or another. And these guys kind of provide that backbone in the form that's the safest, literally report exactly what their holdings are, you know, every day. And it's all backed by US Treasury. So it's dollar for dollar kind of holding. So we really like that because we just think of it as a infrastructure. They're just digitizing literally money and using that to make things more efficient in transfer. So we think about it that way. We also worked on a company called HSI, which is linked to something called Hyperliquid. That exchange basically commits to revenues from the exchange to actually buying back a coin, and we actually invested in that coin. But it's really it's kind of a stock effectively for that underlying exchange business. And again, it's kind of an infrastructure, which is really, it's an open infrastructure. People can come and build products on top of that infrastructure, begin trading those different products. And again, we just think these things are just kind of interesting infrastructure plays where we just see the world kind of going more and more digital. I think you can say that we invest in a company called Covered Genius, which is an embedded insurance distributor through your digital retailers. Again, it's kind of infrastructure in place. You know, we think that's sort of an exciting part of financial services right now.
So for advisors, a lot of advisors are, you know, kind of binary opinions on crypto, like yes, no. But, you know, advisors get tasked with it no matter what they believe, with like clients who are coming in saying, I'm interested in crypto. My buddy made a pile of money on it, whatever it might be. But this could be a different way of getting into a crypto, you know, allocation of some sort. You're kind of betting on the future of the concept rather than a particular currency, buying Bitcoin, buying Dogecoin or whatever it might be. And are those investments that advisors can look into for their clients or are they still private?
So Circle is a public company. So Circle is publicly traded. So it's something someone can invest in terms of, we call it HSI, but it is also public. We actually did it through a trust effectively where we invested in the coin called Hype through the trust. But Circle is right down the middle. Infrastructure, dollar backed. That's very, I would say, truly infrastructure. I would say that HSI is a little bit more on the growth side, and it's really dependent on the adoption of exchanges and people trading things more than just crypto. It's they're trading stocks and S&P 500 futures and things like that. So it's a variety of product. Our thesis is if you believe that things are going to go that way, more and more digital in terms of the trading of assets, this is a way to play on that. With anything that's new, I think there's a lot of things that are genuinely game-changing, truly value-additive type things. And there's a lot of people who are just waving their hand to get a little bit of attention. And that's the fast buck. You know, we really try hard to avoid those types of things, of course. And that's why, again, we always use the word infrastructure as being like where we think it's most exciting.
Yep, that makes sense. Part of what I think you probably believed in DPL, we've got a value proposition that also important, like every aspect of the chain is impacted by the value. There's a better solution for the carrier. It's a better solution for the firm, for the advisor, for the client, all the way through. And it just seems like a change that becomes inevitable.
Yeah, I would say, I don't know when tokenization is going to take over, but it will. It's just more efficient.
Right.
And so, obviously there's systems in place today that work perfectly fine, but they could be better. It's going to take a long time for those things to change, but those things are going to change because it is a better technology. It's a better platform. As you can kind of think of, just a public record of every single trade. There's no disagreement about that, what it is, where it is, all those types of things. And you can do it 24/7.
Yep.
That's a better system. So it's just a matter of how long does it take to get adopted. And I think with a lot of these things, even I think we see this in DPL, you need to get a certain amount of the core believing. And then once that happens, everyone else has to follow. And, I think you're starting to see noise out of the JP Morgans of the world, the Goldman Sachs of the world saying, hey, 4 or 5 years ago, we completely hands off of this and we didn't want to touch it. Well, by the way, now we have our own division. Now we're going to set up our own coin. Now we're going to
right.
It's a matter of time. I don't know how long it takes. It might take 20 years, but it's coming. It's going to,
right. It's
just a matter of when we get that critical mass.
Yeah, those are some big tipping points. When you start getting big distributors, big users signing up and getting behind it, I think we're seeing the same kinds of things with big partners in the RIA space. We work with almost all the aggregators at this point, which really then gets the attention of insurance carriers, which then helps drive additional change and mostly in system side and more support. Then it just becomes a snowball. Yeah, you'll see that throughout different things. I mean, it's funny. I mean, ETFs, I wrote an article about it a few years ago. I mean, ETFs, everybody thinks of them as this huge juggernaut, but they were around for a decade before anyone cared.
Yeah.
Right. So they had very minor adoption for a decade while people figured out, how do we use these? Can we use them as a fiduciary? I'm supposed to be finding the best manager and picking the best managers in the mutual funds. These things have no managers. Can I even use them? And it took a long while before people started saying, yeah, you can use this in a wrap account. You can use this in a fee-based account. It's good for the client. It works. And then they became a juggernaut. But people forget about those first 10 years, right? It's always the overnight success, right? But
yeah. And it's the curve on everything from TVs to whatever is the same, right? It happens way slower than people think. And then it happens way faster than people would have predicted. And it generally penetrates farther than you would have thought. And so, I think what you get, and again, it's kind of getting to that inflection point where you have more adopters than not. And then, the choice becomes, why would I buy that? Right? This is just better. Why would I buy that? And I think, David, one of the things that you guys are doing is trying to make that transition as smooth and as easy as possible, which is we offer you this product. That doesn't mean you have to stop doing this other thing, or it doesn't mean, you can continue to do that, but this is where the world's going.
Right.
And we're here to help you transition to that world.
Yeah. And that's important because, if you've been a user of commission products, that's big revenue first year. You like the fee-based revenue. You already switched your asset management side to that, but that transition might take a little bit. And that's important. And then, one of the other things I definitely experience is, as you're saying, the people from the old network who are going to criticize and throw stones. And we definitely get that, but it's mostly either just a lack of understanding or, just a defensiveness of the old model. But people genuinely don't understand what's going on, with a commission-free product. And it's, like I was saying earlier, it's disaggregation of the comp and the product cost. And people want to conflate the two and say, oh, well, if you have a fee-based product for long enough, the client pays more. And it's like, not for the product. And it's not even true because the commission product, the cost never goes down. But there's all that ward off all the time. And it's part of the territory.
Yeah. And it's probably the highest compliment is when people get more aggressive saying this doesn't work if you know it does. And that's, I don't know if desperation is the right word, but it's definitely where the logic falls apart from the argument. And now we're grasping at straws a little bit.
Yeah. Because otherwise nobody would bother.
Yeah.
Nobody would bother being attacking this model or attacking what we're doing if it didn't matter.
Yeah. The threatened embedded base is pretty large, obviously.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
And again, I think it comes back to as important as it is in everyone's lives, very few of us are that sophisticated in these things. I consider myself to be at least relatively sophisticated from a financial standpoint, but I couldn't tell you half the insurance products, what it actually means and what it actually does, right? But somebody that can simplify that for somebody and just really see what the impact really is rather than taking your word for it. It's easy to throw out all these things, but if I show you a graph that says this is your outcome on one and this is your outcome on another,
right. Yeah.
It's a little bit harder to argue with. And by the way, here's a printout of that. You can keep that for later.
Exactly. And as you know, that's what we do with our tech. And
yeah,
we provide those side-by-side comparisons all the time, both to investments and to other insurance products. And we're happy to do it because, you know, we have a tremendous amount of confidence in how our products are going to be reflected. So the objections we get are generally just reactionary rather than somebody who's done their diligence.
Yeah.
I don't do insurance or commissions better, whatever. It's not, I actually looked at what you're offering and decided it's not good. It's the opposite. You know, we wind up getting chief investment officers who told us, you know, I can't unsee this.
Yeah.
You know, once they actually take a look. And that's been the big challenge. And now we're getting enough people who have seen it that, you know, the challenge becomes through and, you know, helping that ease of use.
And that's why, you know, you'd hope that's the reaction from a fiduciary profession, right? That you'd hope that that's the outcome. And until they know, you know, it's not fair to challenge, but if they, once you know and you kind of see the benefit, I think the other thing that's just interesting, the history of how people manage their retirement, that is, I think it's just really, really changed in the last 20 years. You know, I've talked about this, like my dad retired with a pension. He'd worked at the same company for 35 years. That pension ensured that he's comfortable for the rest of his, you know, his life. You know, healthcare, all that kind of is all bound in that. Like it's all managed and taken care of. Those don't exist anymore. Those packages don't exist.
That's right.
So people need to really plan now for different things that they didn't have to before. And I don't know what the stat is now, but I'm sure it's multiple. Like the average person is going to have 4 or 5 different employers in their lifetime, right? Rather than 1 or 2. And people are going to be in, we have an investment, a company called Andy Mortgage, which is a non-conforming mortgage originator. And, you know, the gig economy, you have all these folks who are doing great, having really successful jobs, but they don't have a W-2. So all of a sudden they don't qualify for a mortgage. You know, it's those types of people who are also planning for their retirement. They have to manage all that themselves and they really need advice. Like they really do need an independent advisor. And that independent advisor needs all the tools to maximize longevity, you know, costs or, you know, in the future, income in the future, et cetera. And that's really hard as an individual to do when you've got a million other things. You know, you really need an advisor to help you on that. And making sure that that advisor has the tools is key.
Yeah, because when you've had the pension, you never really had to worry as much about all those issues, retirement income, you know, being prominently among them. Now, when you don't, and you're in this 401k dynamic of that's your retirement plan, and you're really not, you know, generally an investor even.
Yeah.
Because it's just coming default out of your paycheck, funding the 401k, going into an allocation you probably set up one time when you first opened the policy. And then voila, here you are at retirement. You've amassed some amount of assets and your challenge is to make that last a lifetime. And when you may not know a whole heck of a lot about investing and money management, you kind of blindly accumulated this and that's daunting. So you really do need an advisor. And for me, part of the impetus around DPL was annuities are important tools and they've been bastardized by commission and become controversial because of commissions, but not with academics. You know, academics will tell you, you should be looking at an annuity pretty much for anybody in retirement because of that longevity protection, because of the efficiency of income. And this is just another tool, you know, for somebody to manage a very challenging aspect. Anybody can manage accumulation these days. That's the easy part.
Yeah.
And the client really cares about their retirement because you're very vulnerable. You've now retired. I'm no longer making an income. I don't have control over my income. I've probably got a finite amount of assets and I don't know how long I'm going to live or what expenses may arise or health issues may arise. And that becomes now super vulnerable for the client, super complicated to manage. And if you can take a big variable out, you know, with guaranteed lifetime income, that's huge.
Yeah. And again, it doesn't solve everything. If it solves 60% of the problem, that's a massive amount.
Right.
You know, so I think we're obviously entering an age where obviously people are going to work a little bit longer, people are going to do these things, but obviously anything you can do in the meantime to help de-risk that just makes that decision a lot easier, a lot more comfortable, and you know, you're better prepared as a result of it, and to enjoy that time.
That's great. Well, I appreciate the time today. This has been a great convo, Brian. We're in the middle of the Olympics. I know you're a Canadian by birth. You're kind of a man of the world by your life. The Olympics are going on. Big hockey fan. Who do you have in hockey for the Olympic medals?
I hope it's going to be Canada-US showdown again. And I think that's going to be a very, very tough game, actually. You know, the American team is very strong. And I think they are a nice combination of types of players Whereas the Canadians are, we've got kind of like rock stars of everything, but that doesn't necessarily form into a good team. Yeah, you know, I think it's going to be very, very close. And then, you know, you can't count the Swedes. Those are my top three, which means that none of those teams will medal, basically.
Awesome. Well, appreciate the time. We'll check up on your predictions and your teams and see how they do. And it's been terrific. Appreciate it, Brian.
Thanks, David. This is great.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening. To hear more advisor revelations, go to dplfp.com and subscribe on your favorite podcast streaming app.